Welcome to Predictable with Stu. We're sort of celebrating today. Got some big things out. For a fun show, there's a lot going on, but we're not going to get to that right away. We have a show about redistricting today, which is probably the most boring topic possible. And we've done multiple redistricting shows. Tort reform might be worse. That's probably the only thing. I will say, though, we appreciate you tuning in and trying to understand. This is why we're making it fun, because I've got... How does this thing open? Oh, there it goes. Now I've got it all over the place. Predictableshow.com, by the way. Go there and subscribe. We'll give you all the details of all the markets that you should be getting in touch with and hopefully profiting from. But we're celebrating today. We're not celebrating redistricting. Redistricting can be good or it can be bad. But what we're celebrating is that I actually did something for once that I never do. I'm never capable of doing this one thing, and that's why we're celebrating today. Now, back in, I think it was February, I want you to just understand what my life is like. I went to, we were in San Francisco for the Super Bowl. And, you know, while I'm in Super Bowl, in the Super Bowl markets, everyone's out there, you know, there's millions and millions and millions of dollars going back and forth. I, on the other hand, took a position on redistricting in Virginia. That's how I celebrated the Super Bowl. While everyone else is watching the game kind of sucked this year, but everyone else is watching the game, I'm out there with you trying to find some dollars in redistricting markets in Virginia. And does that make me pretty cool? No, it does not. It does not make me cool. That doesn't mean, that's not what we're celebrating here though today. What we're celebrating is, I looked at those markets and I said, wait a minute. Virginia's trying to redistrict basically to get revenge on Texas. And there's this whole thing going back and forth where all these seats are moving all over the place. And honestly, it didn't make any sense to me. The way the Virginia laws work, basically, at least to my eye, completely prohibited this move by Virginia. They can't do this. Why? Basically, the way the law was set up is if you want to have one of these changes that they wanted to change in the Constitution and do all these fancy things to overturn what they had previously just implemented, which was, hey, we should have like a neutral party, a commission to see whether redistricting should, how it should happen and when it should happen. If you want to overturn that, okay, but you have to do something very specific. You have to have an election. And they have to vote. They have to vote in this particular rule, whatever you want to change. And then there has to be an election, and then you have to vote again afterward. The idea, basically, being the people should have the ability to say, "No, what you're doing is wrong, and we're going to punish you for it at the polls." So you have the first vote by the legislature, then you have the vote by the people that can vote them out. And then you have the secondary vote that puts it into place. So Virginia, of course, I would assume they knew this, right? So they did something very intentional. They held the first vote like 3 days before the election, right? So they were basically saying, hey, we're going to get this through, and then we'll have the election, and then we can codify that afterward. Now, I looked at that, and I said, wait a minute. There's a problem with that whole analysis. You can do it that way, but the problem is because of, and this is kind of hilarious because it's the same, it's another kind of left-wing proposal here, but the left-wing proposal of getting everybody to vote so far in advance, a lot of these people had already voted. These people already voted. They were already, their 40% of the vote was already in. So weren't those people kind of getting screwed? They didn't have that opportunity to say, hey, wait a minute, we didn't like this proposal. We want to vote the bums out, if you will. So all that happened. And they went to the Virginia Supreme Court. And as you may know, the Virginia Supreme Court kind of threw it out and said, nope, you can't do this. You can't do it like this. And I had bought in on the no market on Virginia redistricting at 44%. So I was like, okay, 44%. And then we got the ruling, I believe the correct ruling for multiple reasons by the Virginia Supreme Court. You know, I'm lighting this on fire. There's definitely going to be a terrible story about how the Blaze Studios burned to the ground, but they're called the Blaze Studios. So whose fault is it? Can't be mine. I didn't name it the Blaze. Glenn did. So let's see. She told me to light it at the bottom. I don't know if that's going to work. I'm going to try doing it up here. There we go. Ooh, it's a sparkler. So what did I do? When the ruling came down, the market shot to 94 cents. So I went from 44 to 94. And you know what I almost always do in that situation? Always. What I always do in that situation is wait. And at 94, and I wait, and I sit in that market, and it goes all the way to eventually a dollar, we hope. But then there's all these different problems. There's legal challenges and all this other stuff. And for the first time, I'm celebrating, even though my candle kind of ran out already, I'm celebrating for once. I actually sold out of a market on time. Yes, I actually bailed on the market on time and sold. Ow! At 94 cents. Yes, it actually happened for once. This never occurs. Let me show you the graph. This is the graph. Now, you can see here, on this redistricting graph, you see... This is the worst. Let me show you a redistricting graph at my party. Here is where I bought in. You can kind of see the line. It's right around, I think, the 11th. It's right around the Super Bowl, around 44 cents. And you see at the very end of that chart, a big drop, and it went all the way down to 6 cents. It has since bounced back to 11. And this is why you sell. This is why you get out of the market. This is why you do what I never do. But here we are celebrating one full day of me doing something right for once and bailing out of a market on time. By the way, nothing but cakes. Incredible. I'm going to eat the rest of this in the commercial break. Point is, by the way, strawberry cheesecake inside of the cake. Come on. That's a product. Here's the actual details of the market. I posted this, by the way, over on predictableshow.com. You know, social media at times can be a little annoying. There's crazy people all over the place on all these big social media sites. One of the things I've been doing is going over to predictableshow.com, which is on Substack, and using that as kind of like my home base, because there we kind of have a cool little community, right? It's just us. Just us. We're talking, we're laying out positions, we're talking to each other. I love getting your feedback over on Substack. Please just go to predictableshow.com, put your email address in, and join us over there. Because, like, you know, I'm dropping stuff. When I think of it, I'd rather go there, especially when it's market-related, you know, because there's too much craziness on some of the other stuff. I like that. I like Twitter. I like all that stuff. But we're hanging out at predictableshow.com quite a bit. Here's what I wrote. I entered the no market on Virginia redistricting at 44 cents with a belief that the court would likely overturn it. After it happened yesterday, I sold out of my position today at 94 cents. No need to stick around for the last 6 cents of profit with whatever uncertainty is out there. Overall, 114% profit and a good result, not only for my little account, but also, I think, the right decision for the universe as well. That's just my opinion. So there's a lot going on with the redistricting, and I want to walk you through some of the details on it and what it means, because there's so many changes, so many things going on. It's hard to understand what this is going to mean for the elections and whatever positions you have in these markets. Let's go through some of the details. Redistricting wars. Can our politics get any more polarized? Parentheses. Yes. End parentheses. That's the way USA Today describes it. And they talk about a couple of different changes here. Redistricting isn't over this year. There's going to be a lot more talk about it. I think that's true. The political middle is going to shrink. You're going to see these districts get much more red and much more blue. And very few of those sort of purple districts. I like this one. Minority representation is likely to drop. What does that mean exactly? This is being positioned as some sort of horrible thing because I guess there's sort of these districts that were majority minority districts. Some of those will go away because of this ruling. The Supreme Court basically said you can't draw these districts based on skin color. My impression, you know, my whole life was that was kind of the goal, right? We weren't doing things. We weren't making decisions based on skin color. It was a crazy little idea. This guy, Martin something, once was talking about it and saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't judge each other by the color of our skin. Maybe make it about the content of their character. That was a concept I bought into and still do. A lot of the world has changed on that for whatever reason. I like sticking with it. And what the Supreme Court said is, well, even if you don't like it, the way to change that is to change the Constitution, amend it. That's the way you change that, because the Constitution is trying to be as colorblind as possible. You may have noted in part of our history, we haven't exactly hit that goal all that well. But it is important to understand that that is what our policy, if you will, is. We're not supposed to be doing things like that. That's bad. I don't know if you've noticed, when we've made decisions based on skin color, we've seen some negative outcomes. So we're trying to get away from that. The Supreme Court, I think, quite clearly reads the Constitution accurately and puts that into place. Now, the problem with that was all of these states had sat around and said, well, we want to draw these lines so that a certain skin color gets into office. There's nothing wrong with people with different skin colors getting into office. In fact, it's wonderful. When those people have the merit to win the elections, fair and square. It should not be drawn to put one skin color in or the other skin color in. It certainly, I think we can all agree, would be bad if we were drawing districts to put white people in. That would be bad. We shouldn't do it any way possible. And I will say, any person who is voting can vote for any skin color. This is sort of a generalized thing we used to understand a few years ago, and I don't know what happened. We all went insane between 2020 and 2021, and we forgot all of these things. Well, the Constitution didn't forget. So overall, I think that's positive. Voter confusion and headaches for election officials follow hasty GOP push to redraw U.S. House seats. Again, according to USA Today. Is it hasty? I mean, I've said this before. I don't love the idea that we're redistricting all over the country and drawing these lines in overtly political ways. It's not the way I would prefer to do it, frankly. We are in it now, and both sides are launching all of their nuclear weapons at once. I'd prefer if the radiation wasn't everywhere, but it is. So now you have to try to win, and that's what's going on right now. Cook has decided to re-rate. They're very, very granular. They go through every single race in the House, and they will rate every single race in the House so we can try to get an idea. Using polling and demographics and fundamentals of these races to try to figure out where they are. They're an expert voice and a good expert voice, generally speaking. They have now moved 11 seats because of what has happened here over the last couple of weeks, moved toward Republicans, some of them still competitive. Here's what that looks like. In Virginia, you have Virginia 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7, all of them moving from Democrats to Republicans. Now, Virginia 7 was a solid Democrat, meaning as sure as possible, now is only a likely Democratic seat. All the other ones moved either to toss-up or to Republican directions. I mean, some from solid Democrat to solid Republican, like in Virginia 5. We also see in Tennessee, the 5th and the 9th district moving the same way. In Florida, now Florida's an interesting one. We'll get into this in a second, but 9, 14, 22, 23, 25, all moving from some sort of position on the old rating being very blue to something a little bit more red, with the exception of the 23rd district in Florida, which actually became more solid for Democrats. That's part of the strategy. You take a district that you're going to lose anyway, you lose it by more, right? You take some of those votes that were going to vote for your side, you move it into a district that maybe was close, and hopefully that twists it to your side. Even though the same voters are out there, you wind up winning more districts. That's how that works. How does this play out overall? Open source zone has outlined the Cook Political Report ratings. Republicans plus 7 from all of these shenanigans. Democrats minus 9. And the toss-up category goes to plus 2. So overall, 209 Republicans, 208 Democrats, and 18 toss-up seats. Again, these are projections 6 months out from an election, so take it for what it's worth. We do want to know the information to see how these things work. Let me just run through a few of these districts here to just show you, the giant flip from when these districts actually were changed, or at least may be changed. Virginia's was the most obvious example because they had already passed the new districts. Everyone assumed that was the way it was going to be. The Virginia Supreme Court came in and said no, as, by the way, we talked about back in the day, and we were able to profit on that market. Here is what those graphs look like. The Virginia 01, for example, you see the blue line way, way, way up at the top in that 90% territory. Now we're looking at a 50-50 type of race. Virginia 05, kind of the same thing. Republicans way behind, Democrats way ahead. And you see a giant flip-flop, basically 75-25, the opposite way. Democrats go from 75% chance to win down to a 25% chance to win. Virginia 6, same type of thing. Republicans at about 25, now they're about 80% chance to win that district. Tennessee, 09, you might be able to detect where the change happens on a graph like this. On podcasts, I will tell you, it's basically a long flat line for months and months and months and months. This change comes down. The flip is almost instantaneous. Republicans go from almost a 0% chance up to about an 80% chance to win there. And you see something like Florida 09, we've talked about a little bit. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There's a lot of uncertainty. Now, when you look at the map as a whole, what you see is a giant bunch of red. I mean, if you really look at the map in the country as a whole, most of these districts are red. Where you see the blue is a lot of small districts around cities. I mean, that is really how this looks almost all the time. What's interesting about this map here, as you see this from 270towin.com, there's just not a lot of districts where you see no color filled in. Those are the toss-up districts, and there's just not a lot of them out there. Really, you have leaners almost all over the place, and this is where the Republicans maintain some hope to hold on to the House in November, because normally this would be a bad year, right? Right? Like, historically, we've gone through this information a bunch of times already, but you just lose these races, right? That's what happens when you're doing when you're having an election. You got a president in office, and it's an off election. When you're talking about a midterm, typically you go into that with that expectation that you're going to lose. That's just how this works. Add on to the fact that I just paid $4.40 a gallon for gas in Texas. It's over $6 a gallon in California. That might not hold all the way to the election, but people are going to remember that. You have a war that's unpopular. You have some policies that are unpopular, tariffs, some stuff on the border. All that stuff adds up to a difficult election cycle. What this is doing here is making it possible that the Republicans can be competitive. Here is, this is from the New York Times. Republicans are building an advantage in redistricting. How much is it worth? It's important to understand that it is worth something, but there are asterisks all over this thing. This is one of the reasons why I bailed on that position at 94 cents. I made the 50 cents per share profit, and then you bail, you get out of there. Why? There's a lot of uncertainty. We just don't know what's going to happen legally in a lot of these cases. Democrats are, of course, going to challenge these rulings. They're going to probably fail, but I'm not sure of it, and I'm not sure of it enough to hang on for 6 months to get 1% per month, which, again, in a normal situation is not that bad. In the world we are existing in, predictableshow.com, living here on Predictable with Stu, we want to do better than that, frankly, and hopefully we will. We'll do that together. Let's do that together. Just a couple of notes here. Florida's new congressional map, enacted on the grounds that the Supreme Court's recent decision invalidates the Constitution's prohibition on gerrymandering, faces serious legal challenges. This is true. Basically, Florida was not able to do this the way that they did. They're saying, well, the Supreme Court had that decision. Now we have to change. Is that going to hold? We will see. Democrats will definitely challenge there. Tennessee is the only one that has enacted a new map after the Supreme Court. So we don't have official implementation from anywhere else quite yet. Louisiana, South Carolina, and Alabama will probably do this, but it's possible some of them won't. Some of them might fail in court, so we don't know what that means yet. What this basically leads out to, and let me show you this little chart, a handy-dandy chart from the New York Times. Basically, Republicans had a very slight advantage before all of this started. When Texas and, you know, California went back and forth, it basically wiped out any advantage. They were basically even. Florida doing the redistrict, a 1.4% bump for Republicans. Tennessee up to 1.8, Virginia up to 2.5, if Alabama, Louisiana, and South Carolina redistrict up to 3.9. That number, by the way, 3.9, means basically the generic congressional vote. If Republicans can win that generic congressional vote, they're probably going to win the House. Even if they lose it by about 2 or 3 points, they still have a really good chance at winning the House. Right now, a lot of polls are showing them down by 6 points, though. And that could get better or it could get worse. I do think some people come home as we get closer to an election, but we will see. You can see the changes here reflected in the overall House vote. What we had been talking about this for weeks, Democrats had about an 85% chance to win the House in November. Now we're looking at about a 75% chance. This is, you could see the little curve back over the past week or two, where it's starting to inch back. You have the Supreme Court ruling, you have these redistricting outcomes, you have the Virginia situation, all of this tipping the scales back a little bit toward Republicans. That being said, I don't think we're in a world where Republicans are favored, at least not yet. They have to do all of these things. They all have to go the right way. And then you still have to overcome a difficult year in the election. That's kind of where we are right now. I've been saying this for a while. When we were back around the election, I was buying the shares of the Democrats to win the House, not out of happiness, but out of the desire to profit, at about 55 cents, 55, 58 cents in that general range. I continued to buy up until through the 60s. It continued to rise. Do we have that chart again, that last one by any chance, one more time? I can kind of explain this visually if it is. So you see there, when it's really close, that's where I started buying, in that area where it's about 55 cents. You've seen the constant increase up to about 85 cents. I bought pretty much up there until around 70 to 75. We're back now at 75 cents. At some point, I think this becomes a value again if you're in these markets. I think it's probably high 60s, low 70s is where I've been saying, around 70 cents. I'll consider getting back in. If it gets into the 60s, I'll consider it more. I think those are good prices for just what is, you know, fundamentally, structurally, a very difficult year for Republicans. I build that all in. We'll keep watching it as we go. We'll watch the ups and downs of the market, at least most of the time. That time that at least I bet I'm not eating cake, which I'm going to do right now. So we're going to take a break and we'll come back on the other side. Likely this thing will be done. Let's bring in Dan Andros, news media veteran and friend of the program. Of course, you can find him on X at Dan Andros. Dan, we like talking about these markets quite a bit. We spend a lot of our time just analyzing politics and sports and all these other things. And I love that prediction markets give us sort of an easy context to be able to talk about these. One of the conversations we had, and I wanted to bring this up on the air with you, is this idea of the presidential markets going into 2028. I would say, Dan, would you agree with this? This is maybe the sexiest market. This is the one that people think about, talk about all the time. Who's going to be the next president of the United States? It's the one people love talking about.
Yeah, I mean, because this is like the time when a bunch of no-names have their chance to shine.
Yeah.
You know, just the random people come out of the woodworks and it's like, oh, well, here's a guy who's going to spend $1 billion of his own personal for, you know, Mike Bloomberg's just like, you know what, I'm going to dump $1 billion in here just to get my name in the headlines for a couple months. So it's a wild time. I mean, and it's interesting to look at these markets now, Stu, because they're not super volatile right now. You know, occasionally you get something, but they're pretty kind of steady, but it's going to get insane. So it's like, to me, interesting to try to maybe see what kind of positions are there now so that, you know, you're ahead of the real craziness, like when those 18 person debates start.
Right. Then it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
First of all, just one correction. He spent $1 billion. He did get some headlines. You're right. But he also got, I think it was one electoral vote in Guam. So it wasn't without any outcome, any return on that investment. Yeah. I want to make sure we clear that up.
He's got a big buddy in Guam right now. Yeah. So
let me give you a couple of just to set the stage here. Presidential election winner 2028. The top guys, J.D. Vance is one at 18.8% chance to win. Gavin Newsom, 16.7%. Marco Rubio at 12.3%. And AOC is in fourth. Good heavens. Oh, my gosh. AOC, 5.3% chance to win. As far as the nominations go, you have J.D. Vance at 37%, Marco Rubio, 25%, Tucker Carlson is third at 6%, Ron DeSantis at 3.5%. I don't know if this is the time to make this point, but the fact that a very accomplished governor of a major state is a 3.5% chance to win the nomination, and Tucker Carlson, who, like him or not, has no political experience, and if anything, is taking views, positions on issues that maybe aren't so widely held. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. He's almost double what Ron DeSantis is. There's some commentary there, Dan, that maybe I don't have time to make right now.
Yeah.
And finally, Democratic presidential nomination, Gavin Newsom, number one, 24%. Kamala Harris, 9%. AOC, 8.3%. I mean, think about that's another great one. I mean, AOC with basically, I mean, she doesn't even understand what a garbage disposal is in her kitchen. And she's right up there with Kamala Harris. It's amazing. And John Ossoff at 6.4%. Those are the top guys. I thought, Dan, we could talk through this a little bit in the form of a candidate position draft where We will go through this. We'll have a we'll do this by rounds. You'll get a pick. I'll get a pick. We talk about what our case is. We can discuss there. Say yes or no on what market you might take with that person, or what position you might take on that market. And then we'll go on and do a few rounds here just to take what we would, what our positions are off the top. Where's the value, right? It's not just about who you think is going to win. Where is the value in a race like this? How do you think you can actually maybe profit off of a market like this as well? So Dan, I you know, you're the guest here. I see to you, first pick in your corner.
All right. Well, first quick note before my pick drops. Mm-hmm. You're looking at Polymarket on this because it's a little bit different on Kalshi, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I find.
Yeah. Why don't you give me a quick update on that? Because I pulled Polymarket today on that one.
Yeah. So Marco Rubio is actually first at 2028 U.S. presidential election winner. Rubio is first at 21%. Vance is at 18%. Newsom at third with 17%, and then John, and then a cliff. Those are the three, and then a cliff. John Ossoff is actually fourth on there at 5.6%, and then AOC 4.9%.
Okay, so keep that market up. Well, let's hit both of these numbers as we go through this draft, because one of the reasons we wanted to do this, you're reminding me, is that this was kind of news over the weekend, or maybe it was Friday, where Marco Rubio did overtake on Kalshi J.D. Vance, not just for the presidential nomination, but, you know, as the presidential winner, but also the nomination for Republicans to say, hey, maybe he's the guy. Now, he's performed really, really well, and I can see why he would be the guy. He's had good press conferences recently. He's been able to explain things in a way that maybe some other people in the administration have not been able to do. But that's a pretty amazing thing if the vice president weren't to lead. So with that context, Dan, where are we with our first pick?
I am going J.D. Vance. This is something that I've noted a while back and is kind of bullish on that because for the historical reasons. I mean, you look back at kind of how these previous administrations have gone, and whenever there is a viable vice president in line at somebody at their last term or at the end of the second term, they're usually the ones that if they want to run are going to get that nomination. And so they have just a huge advantage at that point of being the vice president for all this time. There's the people are comfortable with that. They're already in that. There's none of those questions of, can he do this job, et cetera, et cetera. So all of those things are over it. Now, obviously Rubio has that kind of going for him now as he's got a high level position in the administration. But I do think J.D. Vance at 19% or 18%, you know, if you can, again, stick around and wait, I think you're going to see at some point, because we all know how good he is in debates as well. So at the very least, you know, unless he decides out of nowhere, he's not going to run, which that seems very unlikely. At the very least, it seems like he'll get to that primary phase. He'll have a good debate performance and you're going to see him separate a little bit. And so then you can make a decision from there.
Dan, I like the first pick here. I think it's a smart pick. Just to look back at history, if you think about this a little bit, unless you happen to be either really, really old or have some massive scandal going on, the VPs really do have a massive advantage. Now, recent history, I think, is kind of sending us the other way because we're thinking, wait a minute, the last VP who was there for two terms was Joe Biden, who at the time was 147 years old. He, of course, did not run in 2016. Trump wins the election. Then Biden decides to run in 2020 and wins at 151 years old or whatever that was. So he was a guy who was very, very old. He did have, I mean, there's a little bit of a comparison there, Dan, between Biden and Clinton, where you had a high-profile Secretary of State that was a challenger in that race, but Biden was never a guy who had a lot of attention. He was not seen as a central part of that administration. He was kind of a figurehead to show that Barack Obama had an adult in the room. And by the way, this is Barack Obama's own explanation as to why he picked Joe Biden was, one, he didn't want to seem old. He wanted to have someone who seemed older and more experienced. Two, he wanted someone who was white. Again, this is not me saying this. This is him saying this in his book. He talked about this. And that was kind of the plan there, right? It was because he believed no one would elect a young black man with a funny name.
Community organizer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what that was the worry and why he picked him over other people who he liked more. So anyway, Biden gets in there. He doesn't go. If you go back before that, you have Dick Cheney. This is the last VP in this sort of similar situation where you have an end of a presidency of the actual candidate. And secondarily, but again, he had said very early on he was not interested in running. This was just VP and done. So if you go back farther, though, you start to see a lot of vice presidential nominees able to kind of hold on to that nomination if they want it. And J.D. Vance is young. He is a guy who has a pretty large, I would say, appetite for rising through the political sphere. He's got some ambition on him. I like the pick, Dan. I do think he's undervalued considerably. What do you have him on, Kalshi? 23%? On Polymarket, 19%?
It's 19 and 18. 19 on Polymarket, 18 on Kalshi. So to me, I just think there's going to be a surge at some point. At some point down the line. Like, I just don't know how there's not a surge of some kind that really separates them from the field.
There have been rumors, we should note, that J.D. Vance is considering, you know, they just had another baby. He's considering not running to spend more time with his family. There's no real evidence that that's accurate, but there have been leaks and rumors about that. If he were to step down, Rubio looks a lot better in that situation. Most people, particularly when they're young and ambitious, who have an opportunity to become president of the United States, like the one that J.D. Vance is going to be facing here, you know, in really like less than a year, that decision is going to be at the top of his mind. Most people don't turn that down. So I'm just going to put that out there. In fact, I'm going to kind of, in a way, sort of echo your first round pick here, Dan. And this is one thing you can learn as you go through prediction markets. There are oftentimes a bunch of different ways to play a particular choice. If you think J.D. Vance is the favorite, another thing you can do is what I'm going to do here in the first round and say Marco Rubio no. Rubio, you said at 23% on Kalshi. I'm going to say no on that on mine. He's only 13% on Polymark. Is that right? 13%? I don't know why these things are much closer aligned.
Yeah, 21% right now on Kalshi.
Okay, so 21%. It was down from 23. I like that there. I don't think he's going to be the nominee. He is a really solid candidate. He has said, however, if Vance runs, he probably will not run. And you look at this as there's not a huge amount of precedent for this exact situation as we just went through historically. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this one, Dan, because it kind of echoes yours. Maybe it's a little bit of a cop-out on my view. I will say I like your position better, though, because there's more upside there going up than there is going down. And I want to address something about this particular market here in the next segment. If you're thinking about jumping in, give it a minute. Don't like just, you know, hey, I heard that view. I agree. I disagree. I'm going to go into the market. Give me a second to explain one additional factor on a market like this. We'll do it in the next segment. But it factors into both of our first round picks, though I do think you made a solid one with Vance in the first round. Anything you want to add to that, Dan? Or you want to move on to your second round pick?
No, I think that's a fair point. And I think the only thing I would say is that I feel like if you're looking to ride a wave and you're looking to get a surge, I do think Rubio is a guy that could easily get another surge. Mm-hmm. So yes. I do think it, you know, an eventual no is solid, but I do think, you know, but again, he's literally one of the highest ones to have on there. So if you're just, you know, if you're going on the no, like that's where the value is.
Yeah. So. A lot of times in big markets like this, Dan, one of the things I say all the time is it's easier to predict what will not happen than what will.
Yeah.
And I also like a lot of times, I did this with Eric Swalwell in the California gubernatorial market. He was up at 60-something%. Look, I didn't know he was molesting every third person he came in contact with. I will say I didn't know that at the time. But what I did know is that Eric Swalwell has lots of problems, lots of scandals, lots of things that can go wrong. There was no reason to believe he was a 60% favorite. Fading those favorites in a big market like this when things are uncertain is not a bad approach, again, with the asterisk of what we're going to cover here in the next break. Dan, I want to go with your number two pick. Who are you looking at?
Okay. So for my number two pick, I'm looking at, you know, possible upside. Again, this is one of these ones that, you know, it is in the long shot territory. But again, I think a very good chance of some surge. And that is Josh Shapiro.
Mm.
because if you remember, there was a lot of noise last time around about him and how the Democrats wanted him to run because they just felt like he was much more polished. He's in Pennsylvania, which is obviously a huge state. And there was just a lot of noise, and his name was the one that kind of bubbled up,
mm-hmm.
and it made a lot of sense. But they ended up, you know, not going that route. So I just can't see a world in which we have the Democrats trying to figure out who is their next person and not having his name be in the mix. So I do think at some point, because Democrats like trying to go the normal route is typically not what they end up doing.
No, I don't think this is a bad pick. Let me give you, first of all, I think a rational Democratic Party would very seriously be thinking about Josh Shapiro as their nominee. They also very seriously should have been thinking about him as the VP nominee in 2024, and they didn't go that way. Seemingly for very dark reasons, I will say. There was a report.
That's what I meant, by the way, for the VP with his name out there. That's the rumbling I was referring to.
Right. Bottom line is there's a big, you know, there's a Hamas wing of the Democratic Party right now who complains a lot, and they're very loud, and it's not a good thing.
Name doesn't work well when they're trying to support, you know, all of the protesters on Ivy League campuses. Yeah,
There are days I look at the news and I think they're more likely to light his house on fire than they are to actually select him as a nominee. And by the way, the house was set on fire. So that actually occurred. But I like the pick because there is an argument that if they decide to go, a lot of times what we see in politics is a far one way swing to the opposite, right? We saw, you know, a very, you know, people would say sort of boring academic approach from Barack Obama. Then we kind of fell in love with like, hey, this guy who's just going to come out here and, you know, maybe his suit, he's a little disheveled and he's just going to say things, right? That with Donald Trump. After that period, there did seem at that time the central argument from Joe Biden was to kind of say, hey, I'm the adult in the room. I'm not going to be like this anymore. Now, that was a total lie, in my opinion, but it was kind of what was projected at the time. And you may see the reverse happen here. You might see him kind of go back to the Democrats decide to go to a more quote unquote boring choice. And I think Josh Shapiro has a decent record. He's pretty well liked in Pennsylvania. He's had some moments of bipartisanship, if you will. There's a case there. I think it's a good case that you're making. The reason I actually started laughing though in the middle of that was picturing them choosing Tim Walz over Josh Shapiro. And I looking at Polymarket, as I'm scanning down, I'm like, where is Tim Walz? This guy was the VP nominee last time. Shouldn't he be on this list somewhere? And I scanned down and I got past a bunch of different names.
Oh my.
And yes, then finally got down to the bottom.
I'm seeing it too.
Tim Walz, 1%. He is currently next to LeBron James, who is also at 1%. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong in the background here, but Zohran Mamdani, who is also at 1%, who isn't even eligible to be president of the United States. That's the category we're talking about.
Can I give you just an even, I mean, those names next to him are pretty bad on that list, but when you go over to Kalshi, he is at 0.3%. So the folks over on Kalshi are not feeling.
No.
The Tim Walz dancing queen vibes. So
hilarious. Yeah. Hilarious. Okay. I have my next pick, and this is going to be.
I hope you don't take mine. I really hope you don't take mine because I got one more good one here.
I've got one here, Dan. And I look, this is going to be controversial. One of the things you look at in a market like this are the long shots. And I'm in the long shot category.
Okay.
I'm going to go down the list of it because I have a little bit of a thesis. I've watched Donald Trump in politics for a decade now. I don't remember all of the fun, warm embraces, the send-offs to the heir apparent. I don't remember him saying, hey, you've been a good buddy of mine this whole time. You get control of this. Let me hand this off to you right now. I don't remember a lot of those. And he hasn't had tons of opportunities, but I haven't seen a lot of those. What Donald Trump, honestly,
I think I know what's happening here.
Look, what I think honestly is going to happen here, and I'm going to go with this one. I'm going to take this as at 1% right now. on Poly Market. I don't know what it is on Kalshi, but I'm taking Donald Trump Jr.
as
the next nominee. I think I may have fooled with you. I did consider, I think, what you're thinking I'm going to say.
Right. Because that one's on the markets as well. That one is there.
We'll get to that here in a second because we're thinking the exact same thing. But Donald Trump Jr., I will take at 1% because I think there is a real possibility that Donald Trump attempts to hand down the legacy of his situation the same way he's tried to hand down his business, which is to say, hey, here's somebody I can trust. Here's someone I believe in. He's my son. Here's someone who has, by the way, shows up in polls much higher than you might picture for a guy who doesn't have a political profile or is a traditional candidate. What Donald Trump has brought to the table is a love and an addiction to the Donald Trump name. That this is not a I love every one of Donald Trump's policies movement. What this is Donald Trump does things differently, and we have real loyalty to this guy. And if Donald Trump comes out and says, you know what, the next guy, we could talk about J.D. Vance. But remember, the last time he had a vice president, it didn't work out all that well in the end.
Didn't leave on good terms.
For Mike Pence, who I don't even think is listed. Pence isn't even on the list.
Anywhere.
Okay, he's at nothing. So I'm going to go Donald Trump Jr. And one of the reasons I'm doing that is because it's so cheap. Right, I think there is a chance maybe that he runs. There is a chance that we get a new couple news cycles saying, hey, he might be the guy that might pop up from 1 to 5 or 6. That's 5 or 6 times your money and a big, big gain, even if he doesn't wind up being the winner. So I will go Donald Trump Jr. with my second pick.
I like the thinking because as well as just the family name and all the reasons you laid out, he's also not been completely absent from the media. He's gone on Fox a gazillion times. Like, he's everywhere out there. And so he's a known quantity to conservative audiences on that front. And generally, people that are in the MAGA movement probably seem to receive him pretty well. So, if he floated that out there, I mean, at 1.2 on Kalshi, I mean, you could potentially get a bump at some point and then make a decision from there. President Trump is at 2.3%.
That's what the other one we were talking
himself,
about.
That's what I thought you were leading up to, is that he's just not willing to, you know, like, he can't see any other better alternative than to just continue. I don't think it's possible. I don't think he's going to do it. But they're at least floating the idea over there on these prediction markets.
So. All right, Dan, let me take a quick break. We're running super long. We'll come back with our third round picks here in just a second. Sure. It's predictableshow.com. Dan Andros at Dan Andros on X. Back in a second. Okay, to reset, Dan Andros and I in the middle of a presidential candidate draft. This is not who we want to win. This is not even who we think is going to win. What we're trying to do here is look for good market positions on this presidential 2028 market. And again, I want to give you one other note about this market here in just a second that we might not have time to dive in deep today, but it is an important thing before you actually put money into this market. So we'll get to that here in a second. Dan Andros on X and predictableshow.com is the place to go. Dan, you have a third round pick. You picked Vance, number one, yes, at 18%. Shapiro with your second pick at 3%. What is your third pick?
All right, so my third pick here, and I say this at the risk of living in infamy in a montage in 2028 of all the people who said it couldn't happen.
Yeah.
I am going with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at 4.9% on Kalshi as a no.
I'm going as a no, though.
No, this is why I'm saying this clip could live in infamy, because I'm going to be one of those people that she can't win. Just like they did to Trump, right? It's like the montage of all the people saying, you know, laughing and saying no chance. So I just, given the performances I have seen in the public eye, I just don't see, if she were to run, how that would end in a presidential win. Again, crazier things, you know, we've seen a lot of crazy things. So who knows? But I feel like at 5%, you can stack a no here and stack a win.
It's an interesting one. And you know what, Dan, I got to say, I went through a bunch of these here for my last pick. where a couple things you're trying to do in a market like this that's this far out, and you're talking about 1% and 2% possibilities. You're looking for, first of all, just identifying people who will run. Like, for example, right. I mentioned Ron DeSantis. I think Ron DeSantis would be a great president. I think he has a great record in Florida. He is the type of candidate that should run for president. He did run before, did not win, but should run again when he's not against a generational talent like Donald Trump and try to be president of the United States. That being said, is he going to run? I mean, he's going to have likely Vance and Rubio ahead of him at the very least. I mean, it's a very difficult path. I just don't know that he's going to run, so I eliminated him. Where you look at a guy like Pete Buttigieg, who I do not think is a very talented politician, I don't understand how you go from Department of Transportation guy who is, you know, overseeing train crashes and chemical leaks everywhere to the president. I don't know how that happens, but I think he is likely to run. And if he gets into the race, he's likely to go from 2% to 5%, right? Just kind of a default one good poll. You know, might get him a bump like that. So I looked at a bunch of people like this. I did, I will say, seriously, look at Donald Trump Sr. as my third pick. And the reason why I did that is not because I think he's eligible constitutionally to be president of the United States. I do not think that. And I, you know, I've heard some of the arguments it's possible they're going to try to make. I don't think it's true. I do think there's a chance, however, that we at least get a couple news cycles where he's sort of openly flirting with it after the midterms. I don't know. Maybe I should stay. I know there's we might get a constitutional question on this. We might get it challenged to the Supreme Court even. Yeah.
And if that the midterms go really well.
Yeah, if the midterms go better than expected and they get a good court ruling, he could be, or at least there's rumors of a good court ruling. We might see him jump much, much higher. Maybe 10x that number. I think there's, if you could get him at, he was at 0.5% right now, that's what I would pick. He's at 2.3 on Polymarket. What is he on Kalshi right now, Dan? You said 3%?
Let me go. I think he was 2.3 there, and he's at 3% on Polymarket.
Okay, so I just think it's a little high, honestly, for a guy who's not constitutionally eligible for the job.
Yes, yeah.
So I just think it's a little bit high. I feel like the value's not
a lot of hurdles. A lot of hurdles.
A lot of hurdles there. But I do think he controls every news cycle. If he says this in passing in January, you know what? I think I might just run again. If that's what he says, there will be super PACs that'll pop up, and that number will spike to, I don't know, 10, 12, 15. Who knows what it would be? I have no idea. I do think there's upside there, so I did consider that seriously. Just to take you on directly, though, I will take AOC, yes. I will go on. You're going no. I'm going to challenge your pick. I'm going to go AOC, yes. Part of it is the upside, right? Like, there's not as much, you know, to gain on a no. You're only getting 5% there. But there, I think there is upside, and I think there's a chance if she runs, she will show up in the top few when it comes to polling. I think until she gets on that debate stage or has a couple of interviews that go awry, she will have some buzz. She will have great social media videos. She will do that thing. She will kind of do a Spencer Pratt thing, you know, in L.A. I'm hoping Spencer Pratt wins as a mayor of L.A., but she will cause buzz. She'll get people talking about her. So I think if she does run, she's got that sort of long shot chance. And honestly, I got to say, Dan, this is outside of the market thing, but it's like, I do not put it past this country at this point. Like, I would not be surprised.
As I was looking at the AOC market, I thought, you know, honestly, either way here, for the reasons you just stated too, as I'm thinking, like, I could see that because, like, the media loves her. They, mm-hmm. of course, she would have really, really good bumps there, I think, potentially, if she were to run, if she were to actually throw her hat in the ring. So I definitely can see all of that. But I wanted to get your take, actually, Stu, on, like, you know, because my thought, like you said, you can predict what's not going to happen more than mm-hmm. what you can. Like, so all these names, like, is there a scenario here where you've talked about stacking the wins, like the small gains? Like, is there a scenario where you just stack up a bunch of these? That, yeah, I mean, we know Pete Buttigieg is not going to win.
It's hard to imagine.
He's not going to win.
Hard to imagine.
Hard to imagine. You know, anyway, you just run. Tucker Carlson, he's not.
Probably not even going to run.
Not going to win. Mm-hmm. Not going to win the presidency. Like, it's just no. Stephen A. Smith, not going to win. Anyway, Is there a scenario where you can cobble a strategy together of stacking some nodes?
Yeah, I mean, it's there are a couple things on this, and maybe we should spend more time on this at some point. And this gets me to the issue that I was leading to before. You know, of course, remember, when you're taking money and you're spreading it out, if you have like a 1% and a 2% and a 1%, and you're sure on all three things, in theory, you know, if you're sure, you want to put that in the 2% market, because all of it in the 2% market, because you're going to get twice as much returns on that market. It's not like you're getting 1 + 2 + 1, right? You're not getting 4%. You're just getting whatever that highest number is when it comes to those returns. So you want to, you can stack gains. That's true, but you need to do that. That's more of a time argument than right. a bunch of things in the same market. Though you are limiting your risk, right? The good thing about a big market like this, where you go no on a lot of people, is there's only one that will win. So there's a good chance you might hit every single one of the guys as no. You can't hit every single guy as yes, because only one of them can actually get the gig. So that's something, maybe we should expand on that in a future show, because we're running super long here, Dan. But one other thing to think about, and it's related to your point, is you have to constantly be thinking about what is the annual percentage yield, the APY, of your a position you're taking. Timelines are massively important in this game, because if you go in there and you say, hey, I'm going to get 10% on this, that's great. And it might be great. 10% is a great outcome. But when you're spreading it out over 3 years, right, you have to say that's actually only about 3% per year, not 10%. And secondarily, you open up yourself to a lot of risks, right? We don't know what's going to happen in 2 years, right? Like 2 years from now, who knows? We might be all be cyborgs in 2 years. We're predicting a heck of a lot, especially in the AI era, as to what we're going to be looking at in 2 years. So the world could be totally different. It could be a situation where all these candidates are not even considering running. Who knows? So you got to be really, really sure as to what you're doing. And that's why one of the reasons why I like to focus on upside picks, right? You made that with Josh Shapiro, where you have a person. I made it with Donald Trump Jr. You're taking something low with that big upside. If something really, really goes, well, if you're getting 40 and 50 and 60% over 3 years, starts to look kind of attractive. If you're only looking at a short period of time or a short percentage gain as your upside, remember, like with the pick with J.D. Vance, we'll cover this a little bit more, but that's 18% spent over 3 years. 6% a year is your max upside on that if you hold it the whole way. If you're looking for bumps and playing the markets, that's another thing, but we'll get into this a little bit more. I want to give you some examples of how this actually works. But if before you throw money into this, I like putting money into these because I like following it. I'm interested in it. I'll do some placeholder type positions. But when you're looking for maximum gains, usually a market that's 3 years out is not the market you want to necessarily focus on. And we'll get into more details on that here in the coming days. Dan, that was great. Again, let's go through the picks one more time. Dan Andros, first pick, yes on J.D. Vance. Second round pick, yes, Josh Shapiro. And third round pick, no on AOC. I went with no on Marco Rubio. Yes on Donald Trump Jr. and yes on AOC. What a world, Dan. Thanks so much for joining us for the draft. Do you have any final thoughts?
I'm looking forward to being in the AOC, President AOC montage. So it should be great.
We'll pull the video and send it over to the campaign just so they have it. Dan Andros, at Dan Andros on X. I'm at Predictable Show and at Studios America as well on X. But Predictable Show on all the social media. And don't forget to join us at Predictable Show. Dan and I have done a few live streams over there. We're always kind of trying to chime in on whatever's going on. So get there. Get in on the ground floor. You have an opportunity. Get in on the ground floor right now at predictableshow.com. Dan, appreciate your draft. Worst of luck to you so I can beat you in the draft. And we will talk to you next time.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
All right. Dan Andros, thanks so much. We will be back with a new Predictable with Stu tomorrow. Thanks for joining us.